cat and all, but we never lost the battle, you know. Took a lot of casualties. But they couldn't deal with us, so then all of a sudden we started getting regular NPA troops. But they would be, I don't know if they went in and out, but there would be major strongholds of NPA troops that, you know, the war changed, let's put it that way. They were good fighters, and I remember seeing some of the casualties of the NPA when, holy mackerel, they're big. You know, look like Chinese or something, you know, big men, which most of the Vietnamese are small people, you know. So it was a whole new ball game, and then we kind of started, when I got out, we were ready to start moving north, and that's where, you know, things really got rough for the Marine Corps. As you probably saw, and I think mentioned how that one TBS class was half their class up north, you know.
Right.
The ninth, to the ninth Marines, I think.
My guest is Ken Wilson from Woodstock, New York, went to RPI, which is a big-time college ice hockey school, for those of you who don't know, and joined the Marine Corps, and was influenced by Bob Nielsen, interestingly enough. Background in engineering, becomes a combat engineer, goes to Vietnam, and clearing roads and fighting against the Viet Cong, and then the NVA move in. And so we're talking about that. Well, let me ask you about, because I want your thoughts about things like killing civilians that Vietnam veterans have to live with as part of the image of their war. And drugs and rape. So talk to me about those things, Ken. I'm curious. So you led in the fight against the Viet Cong. So you were in and out of villages. What are your thoughts about being painted like that as a combat veteran in your war?
Well, number one, I can absolutely say, experience with my troops and the infantry I had dealt with it and served with, actually took over as platoon commander and company commander for the infantry as we had some casualties and that type of thing. Zero, absolutely zero experience of intentionally killing civilians. I'm sure there were civilians killed in, you know, bombs and all the stuff that we're using. Big firefights where, hell, you have civilian casualties. Not one instance, you know, of intentional. Drugs were, to me, non-existent. I think I had one instance where one of my troops came and said, Private so-and-so is smoking dope, you know.
Right.
And I pulled him aside and threw his ass out, and that was the end of that. That's the only instance I ever had in drugs. Of course, the whole world was changing in drugs in the country, and so new troops coming in were maybe more into drugs than we experienced in the early years, I don't know. But I know you were speaking the other day of Eli. And when I heard about that, I said, that can't have happened. There's no way that could have happened. And then to find out it did happen. And, you know, where in the hell is the leadership and do what is right that Bobby talks about all the time, you know? Gosh, I just couldn't believe it happened. So, no, we had no experience of that. We spent a lot of time dealing with the people in the area, letting them know we're there for them, not for us, type thing. In the Da Nang area, there were a lot of Catholic families that had fled from the north during the separation of the Vietnams way back when with the French and all. And, you know, I always worried what the heck ever happened to them, you know, when we bailed out. But, you know, I'll never know, I guess. I don't know if I touched on most of the subjects, but, you know, I had great leadership. That's one of the things I loved about the Corps. I had wonderful leadership. I could always go and get good advice and got good leadership, and I tried to do the same. I think doing what's right and being able to deal with people was probably one of the reasons I was somewhat successful, not only in the Corps, but later with Turner. Name of the game is dealing with people, yeah. You know? And,
well, you know, it's been interesting because I had last week interviewed two Marines, one a Lance Corporal at Quezon, 21 years old, and then another one, a first lieutenant, Carl Marlanis, who's gone on to be a best-selling writer and whatnot. Marlanis was up in the Central Highlands fighting the NVA, so he didn't experience the war against the Viet Cong and didn't have a whole lot of contact with civilians. So I asked them about, you know, the same story, the same, and they about My Lai, and they had the same response. Like, well, when I heard it, I didn't believe it. You know, like, there's no way. 500 people? There's no way. And so, and then I asked him about mutilation. And Ken Rogers said, you know, we were, as Quezon, as we got done, you know, hammering the NVA, as they hammered us for 77 days, towards the end of it, we began to go patrolling looking for him because the amount of contact had died down substantially. And he said, we were walking through an area that was muddy, and there was a pile of bodies that had been there for a while and were decomposing, and there was a femur sticking out of this pile. And one of the Marines grabbed the femur and stuck it in his war belt. And he said, within a few minutes, you know, he said, I think one of our squadrons walked up and said, get rid of that shit right now. And he said that that's the only time I remember dealing with that. And then Marlana said that, and he writes about it. He wrote a book called What It's Like to Go to War. And he said, I saw two of my Marines had cut off ears, and they had them. And I asked them, I walked over and I said, where did you get those? And they said, from the bodies are over there. And he said, so I took them over, and we found the bodies. They cut them off, and I made them bury the body. And I told him, we don't treat them like that. And he said, I came back as they were burying them, and they both had tears coming down their face. And so, to me, when you talk about, you just mentioned leadership, and it's that's the lesson, where you had strong leaders, you know, guys stayed, you know, near the post. They didn't deviate from what we are. And the most interesting piece of that is if you do that, when you come home, it's not easy to process a whole experience, but you know that you walked the line that you're supposed to walk as a Marine. I did what I was supposed to do. It wasn't pleasant. But I can sleep. When you deviate from that line, you have to live with that for the rest of your life. And nobody can excuse you from it. And that's a long time to live with that stuff.
Yeah, I just can't imagine the young men at the time now, little farts like me who were involved in My Lai and had actually shot women and children. I mean, no wonder they're screwed up guys after they get back, you know.
Right.
The only thing was even close to it. We were on some operation and there were dead bodies all over the place, and one of my troops went over and put a cigarette in the mouth of a cadaver, you know, a dead DZ, and right. was going to take a picture. And I just ripped his ass off, you know. I could still remember his name, but I wouldn't repeat that. What the hell are you doing, you know? He's just going to put a cigarette in the guy's mouth. He had put a cigarette in the guy's mouth and was going to take a picture. Is he?
No, but
I couldn't believe he was going to do that, you know.
Right, and again, in the absence of leaders, you know, people stray, they lose their way. And here's the thing: I think where we miss the point in teaching this to young Marines and soldiers, you're not doing this to keep the honor of the Marine Corps clean. Okay, this is a selfish act. You don't know it, but what you'll live with if you stray. It may not destroy you, it'll certainly make your life worse, and it'll make your life worse for the rest of your life. And I don't, when we talk about keep your honor clean and do the right thing, I think somehow there's this connection to, well, you know, it's for the Marine Corps, and it's not, it's for you. And I think it's really interesting listening to those interviews and listening to how much regret, how disturbed they are by their own behavior, and knowing that nobody can ever absolve them of that. That's a long time to live with that. Interesting yeah. stuff. Tell me about, I got to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about, you said you guys moved north. I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about coming home, transitioning, and then your time at Turner, if that's okay.
Sure.
Former Marine, what rank did you get out at, Kent? Captain?
Captain.
Former Marine captain, engineer type.
Yeah.
There you go.
I feel like a piker here. You're interviewing three-star generals. I was going, oh, well, captain.
No. You want to know something? Marines are always awesome interviews. And they have incredible life stories. Their stories of leadership, are amazing. And so, again, thanks for doing this. My guest, Ken Wilson, this morning from the Queen City, Cincinnati. And, we're going to continue this right after this on a, Tuesday edition of, All Marine Radio right here on, your home for All Marine Radio, the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides...
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Minutes after 8 o'clock here on the West Coast. Privileged to be joined by former Marine Captain Ken Wilson from now living in Cincinnati, Ohio. Ken, I got a couple emails, and then we'll go back to the interview. Email. Mac, how did he meet Nielsen? Ken sounds like an easygoing guy. Nielsen, a little bit more high-strung and uptight. Where the hell did they meet? So how did you meet Nielsen?
Yeah, but we were fraternity brothers at school we went to, Rensselaer in upstate New York. I grew up not far from there, and we became pretty good friends, and Bob was in the PLC program at the time, and I guess through his influence when I graduated from college finally, I joined the Marine Corps and went through the OCS program. So, and then when I got out of the Corps, Bobby had worked with Turner, and I interviewed with a lot of the big construction companies in the East Coast, but selected Turner probably largely through some of Bob's influence, and then we both did careers with Turner and stayed in touch until this day.
So you can't. He's like a booger on your finger. You can't get rid of
him. Yeah, I can't get rid of him.
that is great. The another email. Mac, interesting. I too have learned a lot about Vietnam. The war seemed to change not only year to year, but also geographically, as your guests have documented pretty well. I'm curious, listening to Ken, what did he feel was the most challenging thing that he did in Vietnam relative to being a leader? That's kind of an interesting question. Biggest challenge in Vietnam, leadership-wise, Ken?
Get back to one of Bob's old things. Do what's right. Is key. Take care of your troops. Key. But both in my military life and civilian life. And, the key in communications. I remember one time I got a lecture when I was a platoon commander, I think, and, my CO called me in and said, Ken, you're too close to your troops. You gotta separate yourself more. And I always thought that I had a pretty good balance. Everybody knew that I was in charge, yet I was close to my troops. And yeah, when I started losing some of my troops, that hurt. But I figured that's my problem. I need to take care of my troops and be close to them. And I did the same thing through my civilian life, I think, and dealing with my staff, my subcontractors. They knew I was always looking out for them. I don't know if that answers the question.
No, it's a good answer. Let's talk about you coming home. You guys came home and got out much different than we do today. How did you come home to a nation that really, first of all, what year do you get discharged from active duty?
68, I got out of the Corps.
Oh, that was a good year.
I joined Turner in 68, so I probably got out in late 67, 60, something like that. Okay. Somewhere.
All right. So just for those of you that are too young to know, 1968 starts with the Tet Offensive. We then migrate to Martin Luther King's assassination. From there we go to Bobby Kennedy's assassination, the Democratic Convention in Chicago that is just a riot throughout the whole thing. Vietnam continues. My Lai happens, although nobody knows about it for another 2 years, for the most part. It's not your basic solid year for the United States. So you get out, you come home. Did you do what a lot of Vietnam veterans did in terms of, you know, I grew my hair, I didn't talk about Vietnam, I just kind of tried to move on with my life? How did you handle coming home?
Well, initially, when I got back, I came back into San Diego, and I had a good buddy who lived in San Francisco, and so I flew up there and met with him. We stayed drunk for a week.
There you go.
So that was my initiation of coming back. And then things got worse in terms of fighting against the war, da-da-da-da. But I just, I guess I'll say I shrugged it off. I know a lot of people, for good reasons, are having terrible times and dealing with their history in the war. I don't know, but somehow I haven't had that problem personally. I did what I did. I saw what I saw, and some of it wasn't very good, but I don't have nightmares about it like some people do, and PTSD and all that. I just get on with my life, I guess. And that's when the protests, when I got back, that's when protests were really starting. Here we were in San Francisco. I'm out in my damn Marine uniform with my buddy getting drunk, and I don't remember anybody harassing me.
Are you a big guy? How tall are you?
No, I'm only a little guy. I'm 5'9", 200 pounds an hour. I used to be like 160 or 180.
So you're
old.
All right.
I wasn't a 6'10" Marine giant.
Exactly. Well, that's interesting. Do you think your ability to process it, put your head on the pillow and go to sleep, has a lot to do with your ability to lead and do the right thing? Because to me, I don't know, it seems like those things don't always go together, but they go together an awful lot.
I think that might be key. I probably did some things wrong in both my military and maybe later in my civilian life, but I always knew that I did my best. I did what I thought was right, and I could get on with my life.
No, that makes sense. I don't know that you need to elaborate on that. I mean, I think that if you're doing that, you tend to be in the ballpark most of the time, and then you can play it forward from there. But when you get outside that, certainly is a different case. Let me ask you this: one of the missions of All Marine Radio is post combat related health. I'm sure you've just as a leader, I'm sure you crossed paths with some of your Marines that have had difficult times. Do you give any advice to people relative to mental health? Because, you know, there was no PTSD diagnosis when you guys came back. You know, you guys came back in the shadow of World War II veterans, and I think it was Nielsen. No, it wasn't Nielsen. It was somebody else. Oh, it was the guy from Quezon, Ken Rogers. Talked to me about getting his ass chewed out by a World War II veteran, saying you guys can't do shit if you can't kick their ass. It's like, what? And then Nielsen sent me a message and said, you know what? I heard the same shit from World War II veterans. So you guys live in the spectrum of World War II. And Korean War veterans did the same thing. Oh, you guys couldn't get it done. Do you offer any mental health advice to people? I'm sure you've been dealing with this since you got back.
I don't think way back when. I think when I got back, I went back to my hometown, joined the American Legion, dealt with Korean and the World War II veterans, and always treated with great respect. Things have changed finally that, you see so much. I mean, I can't even see how many bumper stickers I see with saying I'm a Vietnam veteran now.
Right.
I don't know how many of them are true, but, but all of a sudden, there's great respect in today's world, it seems, and it wasn't that way back when, but, I didn't let it bother me. I don't remember counseling with everybody back in those days, but I have, as years gone by, run into young people, I say young people because I'm old, that, and just shot the shit with them a little about, you gotta get the stuff out of your brain, what's done is done. You got to get it out. Get on with life, We've had a couple of chats with guys at the local pub, maybe with guys who were struggling a bit, but that was always my message. What's done is done. You can't do anything about it. Get on.
Talk to me about did you have any, you were an engineer, did you want to do construction? Because one of the things, Bob is part of an initiative that we have going here, Turner's looking to hire 10% of their workforce this year to be combat veterans, and which we love, a company that's veteran-friendly, that is looking for leaders. Did you want to get in this construction business? How did that come together? Or was it something that kind of, Nielsen opened your eyes about?
Nielsen had so much, but I guess the sort of thing, when I was in high school, I said, well, what the hell am I going to do? And the advisor said, well, you're good in math. You ought to go to an engineering school. So, okay. So I applied to engineering schools. And then as, and I had worked in construction quite a bit as a young guy in high school and college, so yeah. There was a natural direction for me, I guess, psychologically. And then plus, Bob Nielsen was an influence on me because he had experience with Turner. And so I kind of headed in the construction area, which kind of suited not only my education, but my past experience with a lot of people as I grew up, who were in construction.
Interesting.
But it made sense to head in that direction.
My guest this morning is Ken Wilson, former Marine captain and retired from Turner Construction. If you were talking to veterans and you were telling them about a career at Turner, what would you tell them?
I guess the thing we've been talking about, leadership is everything. You got to be able to lead. You got to be able to direct. The experiences I've had with Turner, who I was with for 38 years, I guess, was very similar to the Corps. I had great bosses, with very few exceptions. Performance-driven. Everything is performance-driven. Doesn't matter that you've been sitting around for 20 years if you're not performing. And advances, pay, all that kind of stuff at the Turner was absolutely performance-driven. That I found out was pretty much true of the Corps. So I had a very happy career with Turner. I can't tell you how many job offers I had with Turner while I worked with Turner, from owners, other contractors. Never even considered one.
Why didn't you? So how many years were you at Turner when you retired?
38.
Holy smokes, man.
I was an old fart.
Lifer. Wow. And so what did you do? What did you wind up doing? What was your job at Turner?
Well, I started, I'm a graduate engineer, hired out with Turner. That's how I got out into the Midwest. First job was in Toledo, Ohio. And Toledo, Ohio, where the hell is that,
Exactly.
But anyway, I started as a field engineer, recalled. And the guy on the job with the transit and the level, giving all the controls and everything for the carpenter. And crews is we did our own concrete and made sure the steel was straight on a 34-story office building. So I started as a field engineer, transit and a level, bottom of the ladder. And then I worked my way up to assistant superintendent. I stayed pretty much on the field side with the business units as opposed to Bob, who went into the international world. And then I worked my way up from assistant superintendent to project superintendent, project engineer, project manager, project executive, and then wound up as vice president and operations manager of the Cincinnati business unit, and then they spread me out to take over the Columbus business unit, and then the Nashville business unit. So I did all the operations, which is basically all the staff and personnel-related stuff, and responsible for all the jobs. The other vice president of business unit is a general manager, and he's the boss, and his big job is sell, get work, and then I was in charge of performing the work and taking care of the staff. And then I wound up, company asked me, can you go down to Texas? And I went down to Texas and finished my career in Texas. And then along with that became one of the three senior operations managers for the company. That was kind of interesting. So it was, like, holy crap, 38 years has gone by.
All right, let me read you another email. Mac, I'm curious. I heard Angie Morgan on your program a few months ago say that the Marine Corps is the best leadership training academy in the world. We don't tend to know it because we're so close to it. But for a leader, you can't ask for better training for life than to be a leader in the Marine Corps because there's so much emphasis placed upon it. I'm curious as to what Ken thinks about that. Did his time in the Marine Corps prepare him uniquely, or maybe not so uniquely, for the roles and responsibilities he would assume later in life? He certainly did okay by any stretch of the imagination. I've enjoyed the interview this morning. His thoughts on Vietnam and leadership are pretty interesting. Thank you. So, Marine Corps prepare you well, or would you have done that no matter what?
No, I think that was absolutely key. We keep talking about it. Leadership, take care of your troops. And I certainly was versed in that in the Marine Corps. If you think of leaders, my gosh, the leadership that my squad leaders had to, exhibit and perform. Holy mackerel. That's, amazing. And as I went on and think back on my construction career and hear things we're talking about with Turner. You know, I said, well, I was a graduate engineer, but I learned the whole business on the job training. I mean, I didn't use my degree to design bridges or buildings because we're a performance company. Build. We don't design, make it a design partner. But everything was leadership, dealing with people, taking care of your subordinates. Kind of interesting. I had to have a recent birthday, and one of my old guys who's now a project manager or something sent me a note saying, the thing I remember about you, Ken, is when you hired me, you took all the new hires that you just hired, and they all came to your house, and we all had a big cookout and dinner. And I still remember that, yeah. So that was pretty amazing, I thought.
You know what? But those are things that we learn as leaders, just, you know, treating people with respect, bringing them close to you, learning about them so you can influence them. You know, the rest of the world doesn't go to that leadership academy. And so something like that you take so for granted, right? Like, come on, what was that? You know, obviously, if he would have had that experience a lot in his life, your experience wouldn't have been unique. So it is amazing just... you know, just the taking care of your Marine piece of it and how that impacts your life and impacts other people.
It had a major influence on my, not only my career, but my life, I guess, in dealing with people and doing what's right and leading.
All right, I've got another email for you. Hey, Mac, is Ken a Reds fan now or is still a Mets or Yankee fan?
Well, I grew up a Yankee fan, okay?
Say no more than you can't switch, right?
Oh, my gosh. Uncle Sam and I were Yankee fans. My dad and my other uncle were Giants fans. That's when we had the Polo Grounds, Ebbets Field, and old Yankee Stadium, saw ball games and all. But grew up a Yankee fan, Mickey Mantle, Phil Rizzuto. When I came to Ohio, wound up in Cincinnati, we had the big red machine.
Right.
So it was hard not to quickly become a Reds fan.
Right.
Plus the Yankees changed. It became, I think they're bought out by CBS or something. And right. All they were doing is out buying players, which I just fell off that thing. And yeah, I'm still a Reds fan, even though we're in the quote rebuilding period.
Yeah, no
kidding. Terrible year.
No kidding. That's it's a beautiful ballpark they have there, though.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
A nice place to go. I mean, that's one thing that's nice about downtown. About Cincinnati, it's small enough that I can drive downtown to the ballpark in 20 minutes, 15, park, walk in the ballpark, drive home in 15 minutes. You know, not like going to a ball game in Yankee Stadium back in the old days, you know.
Come on, there's nothing like going to Yankee Stadium. I don't know.
I'd love to go to the new Yankee Stadium. Right. I've driven by it, but I've never been in it.
No, you know, I grew up a Yankee fan. I grew up in Sacramento, California. My dad was in baseball, but there was only one game on TV every week on Saturday morning on the West Coast. And normally, Mickey Mantle selling Vitalis with V7 in it. right? I mean, they used to, at the end of the commercial, the 7 would come off Mickey Mantle's number, and it would attach itself to a V, Vitalis with V7. I mean, hell, I know.
Oh, my gosh, I remember that.
And so, but, you know, so Mike McNamara and Mickey Mantle, we had the same initials. I was a Yankee fan, and but then my dad gets to the big leagues in 1968 with Oakland, and I just root for my dad's team. He retires after, you know, going to Boston and then ultimately Cleveland. And I don't have a team. Like, well, who's my team? I have to, you know, at the age, you know, I'm 40. I'm like having to figure out, like, what team is my baseball team? What the hell? And so, and it's 1996. Derek Jeter makes that play in Oakland where he flips the backhand flip and they get Jason Giambi at home plate. And I thought, like, who am I kidding? I'm a Yankee fan. Who is this kid? And so I've been a Yankee fan when I wasn't rooting for my dad's team, and so so. But I will tell you this: it's if you've never had the experience of getting on the subway and going and seeing the Yankees and the Red Sox play, where everybody on whatever train that you're on is normally headed north towards the Bronx, uptown as they call it. Everybody's got their hats or a jersey on and people are yelling and it's just, you get off the subway on those old platforms and I like the old stadium better than the new one. And it's just a magical thing. And the hate goes back over 100 years. It's awesome. And it's like one of the few sports rivalries we'll ever be around. And I love going back there when they play the Red Sox. So I'm a fan. I'm a fan of it. So,
yeah. By the way, Mac, just to back up a second there, what you said, that absolutely the leadership that I and many others, including non-officers, NCOs, learn in the Corps is just astounding. And I don't play the service game, okay? Army, Air Force, I don't care. I don't play that stupid game. I had a guy come up to me the other day. I have, of course, a couple of Marine Corps stickers on my car, and I got a OnStar license plate. And a guy came up to me almost apologetic, saying, geez, all I did was serve 4 years in the Air Force. I went, well, don't feel sorry about that, buddy. I damn well appreciate what you did, too. You were deployed. You were this. You were that. Don't give me this Marine Corps crap, but I'm damn proud of my Corps, you know?
Well,
I don't play the service game. And I think you learn leadership in most of the services, but, you know, definitely in the Corps from boot camp on. You know, it's leadership, leadership, leadership.
Right. I don't play it very often, okay? But if I have to, I will. I mean, the bottom line is, look, we're the nation's 911 call, right?
And, well, I agree.
Now we're the White House's 911 call. The White House in trouble. Who do we get to unscrew it? A Marine. So I'm.
Well, hopefully Kelly straightens things out.
Well, he had a good first day. Get that.
Yeah, hey. he got rid of the mooch.
Yeah, get rid of that sawed off Italian.
What a disaster.
Exactly. Yeah. Within like Kelly just got sworn in. Mooch, you're done. Pack your shit.
Well,
get out of here.
Hopefully Kelly makes a difference because I sure need help. And believe me, I voted for Trump, but lately I've been shaking my head.
No, I think
that's one of the main reasons I voted for the Supreme Court. So that mission accomplished already. Let's see if we get something else done. Anyway,
no,
get into all that.
No.
Glad to see the general there.
Yeah, no, I know him personally. He's a good guy. He's a savvy guy, and I couldn't imagine him coexisting with a guy like that. And I think the wonderful thing about having him, General Mattis and General Dunford, all in such marquee positions, the way they conduct themselves, if you want a little bit of a clinic on leadership, if you study it, watch the way they conduct themselves at press briefings and things like that. Very direct. They don't play games. They treat people with respect. You know, and it's a lot of the great things that the Marine Corps teaches, and they practice it. And in a very tumultuous world, you have not seen General Kelly, who was at Department of Homeland Security, you haven't seen his name plastered all over, and he's probably had the most contentious portfolio in terms of the border wall, what ICE is doing, and all of that. Yet you haven't seen him in the news all the time. Hell, I mean, when he got to the White House, he still hasn't been in front of the media, and so I think it sets a great example for what it is to be a leader. To put the country before anything else, and to try to do the right thing. So I like that our guys are out there. So
yeah, but don't get me wrong. I mean, the Corps is the Corps to me. It's still part of my life. And I think it was a commandant came out some years back with a message, either a Christmas message or birthday message, saying there are no ex-Marines. Yeah, some people say. So I've taken ex-Marine out of my vocabulary. Once a Marine, always a Marine, and I'm damn proud of it.
No, you know, we never get over the experience. I've got another email for you. Mac, I'm curious, his time in the Marine Corps plus another almost 40 years at Turner, what leadership advice does he give? I'd be curious. I've just gotten out. He's obviously had a long, successful civilian career. What advice does he have for members of the military getting out now? Thanks. Leadership advice.
Other than the fact, you got to work hard. Okay, I mean,
right.
You got to be busy, and especially in the construction business, every day is a new day, and it's you got to work hard. Okay, but the key is communications. At least was for me. I think I contribute. A lot of my success with Turner, not so much that I was the greatest builder, because I had people who eventually worked for me who are much better builders than I, in terms of going out and solving these horrendous problems we have every day in the construction business. But I could communicate, okay? And I could, lead, I could delegate, that was a key, and a lot of that I learned in the Corps. You know, you got to be able to delegate. You give an order, and you watch them carry it on. You don't do it yourself. You know what I mean? And that was key to my success. And I think probably in any business, but certainly with Turner, like I said, they're performance driven, and leadership, do what's right, and communicate. I was very successful, and I built a lot of jobs as superintendent, project engineer, big ones, you know, $300 million jobs and stuff. The key was get my subcontractors to work with me. You know, I didn't fight with the sub. We bought sometimes, but you had to get the subcontractors on your side. And when you had to stand up for them, you stood up with them. I mean, if you had to go to the owner and help the stand subcontractor get the money he needed, you know, I fought for the subcontractors, and they respected it. And so I think that was the key to my success. in my civilian life is taking care of the troops and doing what's right.
Well, let me tell you. So if you're listening and you're transitioning, you ought to feel awful good about that advice. And again, that comes from Vietnam through 38 years of the private sector. So when did you retire, Ken?
'02, I think.
And so
long ago, I almost forgot.
I've
been retired for 15 years.
My guest is Ken Wilson. He's a former engineer captain, Vietnam veteran, and veteran of Turner Construction. What do you do retired now? Well, I mean, is your day filled with going and getting the dry cleaning and the newspaper and a cup of coffee? What? Tell me about retirement. How do you do it?
I remember saying way back when I retired, because I was very involved in my business, okay? I worked long hours and all that stuff, you know, while raising a family with a wonderful wife and all that. But when I retired, someone said to me, holy crap, you know, how the hell are you going to retire? You've been so active in the business, da-da-da-da. And someone said, you know, months, year, whatever. How long did it take you to get used to being retired, to adjust? I went, maybe 2 hours. Yeah, I adjusted quickly. I said, okay, time to go fishing.
Is that, I saw the picture I stole to promote your appearance this morning. It's a picture of you with some kind of gigantic fish. Is that a pike caught where?
Lake St. Clair up in Michigan, which I've been up there 3 times this year. Wonderful place to fish. So, I do a lot of quote-unquote bass fishing. I've got one of those bass boats. I used to fish a lot of bigger tournaments now. As I'm getting older, I can't deal with all that. So I got a bunch of guys. We've been together for almost 30 years, I think, out here. And we fish together and travel all around. We go down to Tennessee, Kentucky, up to Michigan, and good buddies, you know. So I spend a lot of time. I stay very active around my home. I got a nice big yard. Boom, with a garden. And I lost my wife years ago. We did a lot of things together, but now I have a new partner who fortunately lives with me, and we do a lot of things together. I have good friends. We go out to dinner. It seems like I'll sit down and make a list of what I get done today. Halfway through it. What the hell happened to the day? I only got halfway through the list.
I got another
email. So I continue. One thing, I'm not as active as physically as I used to be. In fact, I just went in yesterday to see about getting a knee replaced.
Uh-oh.
And, which I blame on the Marine Corps, because I used to run 3 to 5 miles every day after I get out of the Corps. And I'm convinced that pounding my legs on those damn roads all over the country did my legs in.
Well,
so I'm not as active in terms of my knees are both bad right now, but, other than that, I stay active.
Get them replaced. Yeah, I've had friends that have done that, and they said, hell, I wish I would have done it sooner.
I saw a doctor yesterday, so we're planning to have my first one replaced in November.
All right.
After my fishing season.
There you go. There you go. I got a Vietnam email here. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. One of the things that has surprised me about the whole Me Live thing is the hostility of that group of soldiers towards the Vietnamese people. When I listened to the interviews last week, it astounded me that for a unit that had only been in the country for 7 weeks, that they would have that kind of hostility, and that no officer or staff non-commissioned officer would question an order to kill civilians in a village. I just heard your guest talk about the poor Vietnamese people, the way they got hammered by the Viet Cong, the way village elders got executed. What does Ken think of that kind of attitude? It just seems so odd to me when I reflect on it based on what he said earlier. Your comment earlier, Ken, you saw that they were kind of a pawn in the middle of this game. Was that too hard to escape? Was that a a conclusion that you had to be really smart to get your hands around?
I don't think so. I mean, from birth on, you learn about people, I guess. As I said earlier, when I heard about Milai, I couldn't believe it. I mean, how could that possibly happen? And then as you're talking about, I didn't realize it was a new unit.
Yeah, that's what astounded me.
Maybe that's part of the problem, okay? I'm thinking as we're talking here, okay, is that as you get there, and if you're involved in the combat situation, you see a whole bunch of shit. You lose guys. I used to call them kids, half of them. I lost some guys who are older than me, you know. But you're exposed to that, okay? And not that you say it's, I'm used to it or anything, but you're exposed to that. You see people dying. You see people getting blown up. You see people getting shot. And you see enemy laying. I mean, one time we had Hill 33 run over, and in the morning we loaded bodies up in dump trucks or something. But you get exposed to that, okay? And when some of your troops get killed, injured, you're just boiling inside. But if I'm picking up, as you just said, you got a new bunch of troops coming in that haven't seen a lot of combat. And I think they just had experienced some casualties. But they, you know, my thought is at this point is, well, they haven't seen much yet. You know, they're not used to it, not to get a bit used to it. They're not used to seeing this crap. And, so maybe that's part of the problem is, one, maybe for the first time they experienced the horrendous things of war, people dying, getting killed, your friends, your boss, and being new, maybe that's part of why they couldn't handle it. Still, I just can't believe it ever happened. But the only thing is we're talking, if they're new troops, maybe that's part of they're losing it.
Right.
And, of course, talent. I mean, where the hell is leadership? I don't know. Yeah. You're sitting there for one day. You don't let your troops shoot or tell your troops to shoot civilians. Oh, crap. Just unbelievable. But the only thought I have is maybe they didn't have much experience yet, and they hadn't seen some of the horrors that most of us saw. And maybe that's what sent them over the edge, at least that asshole Cali. I can't imagine these troops wanted to shoot civilians on their own.
Yeah, it is amazing.
They may have just gotten caught up in the horrors of I just left, saw three of my buddies die, you know.
Right, they had, in 6 weeks in Vietnam, they had had, at that point, three soldiers were KIA, and all of them I believe were booby trapped. They had not made any significant contact. It was because it was post Tet. The VC were bled white, as were the NVA. They were licking their wounds at that point in early 1968 after getting their asses kicked.
They were kicking ass then.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Interesting stuff. So it wasn't a hard conclusion to come to that because, I mean, it was the same way in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, shit, these people are farmers. Why are they growing opium? Because they can add, okay? There's not a whole lot of law out here. It's the largest crop that they can produce to make the most money. They're farmers, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, unless somebody comes out here and enacts a government that can rule the nation, you know, they're going to grow what makes them the most money, for God's sakes. They're farmers. And that's why it's there. But you know what? They're just trying to live the meager life that they have. They're just trying. And when the Taliban comes back, and they did, right? They're going to get along with the Taliban just like they tried to coexist with the Russians. They're the ping pong ball. And so.
I understand ISIS has kicked the Taliban.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know.
So, but it's not hard to see them as a ping pong ball, yet that was missing in the My Lai thing. So very interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this. What haven't I asked you either about Vietnam or your career at Turner that you want to make sure that people know?
I know. I think we covered a lot of it. I'm not here to maybe help with the Turner effort, but, another thing, as I learned in the Corps, training. A big part of my training was on-the-job training. The Corps spends a ton of money and time in formal training, classrooms, and everything from bricklaying on up. So the training program is key. And as I said, opportunity, performance, you got to be performance-driven. Take care of those who are performing. Get rid of the deadwood who's not performing because someone else is doing twice as much because of that person, you know.
But anyway, again,
a lot of commonality between the Marine
right.
Corps and Turner.
All of that, yeah. all of that sounds like things that I've been doing for most of my adult life. And so again, if it's a veteran friendly environment, it seems like certainly a place to at least have a look and give them and give them at least an opportunity. And one of the things that Nielsen has talked about, and I'll get your thoughts on that, is the requirement to have a construction background. Nielsen says not only no, but hell no. It's just not necessary.
Yeah.
They'll teach you. They're looking for leaders that are problem solvers, team builders. And I think the good example is you talking about working with subcontractors, getting them on board, solving their problems. That's what you do every day as a leader in the Marine Corps. So it sounds like it does. That
yeah.
Those leadership skills translate very well.
I don't know if I said it previously, but not to be redundant, but when I first heard about this, I went, oh, crap, because almost all the young people we hired were graduate engineers or architects out of certain schools that we recruited at, and we were pretty picky about who we already recruited, okay? And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, you're going to bring all these people in that don't have engineering degrees and all that? How's that going to work? And I got thinking, as I may have just said, well, I didn't design anything. I learned everything when I got with Turner.
Right.
I learned how to build from Turner, not from school. I understand the physics of the structures and all that, but that wasn't key to my performance.
Your ultimate success. All right.
Yeah.
Well, sir, I hope in the future you don't mind if I bug you to come back on and whether it's...
No, hell no. I enjoy chatting to you, Mac.
Talking about leadership or...
Like I said to you, and I keep saying... Bobby, my friend Bob Nielsen, is you're still my hero, Bobby. And he recently said, thought about Vietnam. I didn't do anything special. I said, Bob, I'm not talking about Vietnam or Turner. I'm talking about what you're doing for the troops now. I mean, what he's been doing and the time he spent in hospitals since he was first assigned as liaison officer at Walter Reed, still in the Corps, and he's stuck with it ever since. And what he does is just I'm proud of him.
Well, I will tell you this. All Marine Radio would not be on the air were it not for Bob Nielsen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I get email every week from guys around the world saying, wow, I just found out about the radio station. I started listening, and holy shit, this is my tribe. I love listening to other veterans talk about what they've struggled with. I love hearing about them talking about their combat experiences in retrospect, the wisdom that they have, the struggle that they've waged, and thank you for doing it. Well, let me just tell you, that it wouldn't still be on the air were it not for Bob Nielsen. And so,
yeah, and I think he's gotten some help from Turner from
right.
The president, who we both know well, has been very helpful, I think, in assisting.
As
he should.
All right. Look, first of all, I hope the Reds, you know, at some point finish this rebuilding thing. What the hell? Just want to thank you for coming on today, Ken. Obviously a privilege to have you on.
My pleasure. I sure enjoyed talking to you and was simplified, brother.
All right, bud. You have a good day. Thanks.
Thanks.
Good luck with the knee replacement. Ken Wilson. It's all about leadership. You know, it's really interesting to peel back the whole Vietnam piece. Really interesting because it has all the elements to be an absolute fucking nightmare if you, by God's lottery, wind up a subordinate to William Calley. as opposed to Ken Wilson. And you've heard the stories of you know, guys who were in Vietnam talking about what keeps you on the straight and narrow, which ultimately serves your life's interest the best. It's not for any altruistic reason, man. It keeps you where you need to be. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Actually, Mike Musselman will join us when we get back. You're listening to a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for All Marine Radio. That is the All Warrior Radio Network. So we'll see what the gunner has going here coming up next, and we'll see if he's happy or sad or whatever the hell he's doing. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. We continue on a Tuesday edition right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Again, my thanks to Bob Nielsen for setting that up. And again, if you're just like the commercial says, if you're interested in a career at Turner Construction, then all you got to do is shoot an email to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And that winds up, that gets to me and Nielsen, and we will go ahead and contact you and get the ball moving. If you have friends that are getting out and are looking for careers, I would tell you they're straight up stupid not to look at Turner Construction, a global business with offices all across the country, veteran friendly, and looking for veterans. So enough said. We'll take a break. Mike Musselman joins us next on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.